I never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to another Skinnamon podcast. And yet again, it's a beautiful day in Dublin. We're getting a few of them when we're recording this year. It's nice.
Thanks, you've jinxed it. Such is the weather in Dublin. That's just the way it goes. You say it's lovely. Tomorrow, it'll probably bucket down.
And those dulcet tones, of course, are Philip Bagnall. I'm also joined by Jason Coyle today.
Yes, you are.
So,
I don't think my tones have ever been described as dulcet before. But thank you.
So, gentlemen, have you watched anything good this week?
Yes. Okay. Yes. My rewatch of the weekend would have to be Birth. Jonathan Glazer's masterful film. Noel, yeah. Are you a fan? Given such your huge fan of
Under
the Skin.
I like Birth. I do like Birth. I despise Under the Skin, but I like Birth.
It's very good and well worth a rewatch, I would say. Everybody, all and sundry.
I watched it when I was probably a bit too young to get it, so it's due a rewatch, but I have no doubt I will like it. Because I love Under the Skin.
Oh, you shall.
Philip, what did you watch this week?
I didn't get to watch near as much as I'd hoped to. What I did watch, though, was Shane Meadows' Le Donc a Scorsese, which is an odd kind of Spinal Tap wannabe with Paddy Considine playing this roadie/wannabe rocker manager thing and his sidekick, a rapper named Scorsese. Now, if that name doesn't get me roped in, well, I would. In any case, it's not as funny as it thinks. It's a bit too light, but, you know.
Enjoyable enough?
Yeah, it passed 71 minutes.
I have it on my hard drive for quite a while. I keep meaning to get to it.
The most thing I liked about it was actually the rapping.
I wouldn't believe, no.
And you know me, I'm such a rap connoisseur.
Oh, all my rap questions are always directed at you.
Is there a thing where, like, rap stars in films have to be named after famous directors or actors? Because there's Al Pacino in Tropic Thunder.
That's right. Al Pacino. What was his big hit again? Booty Sweat.
Yeah.
No, that was his product.
That was his drink. Yeah. That he had to sell. Yeah.
Booty Sweat, indeed. Yeah. Where do you go from there?
Down, to be honest. Yes, I didn't think all that much of Tropic Thunder, but there you go.
I liked it.
I watched a comedy this week. I rewatched 21 Jump Street last night.
In preparation for 22 Jump Street.
Yes, getting ready for 22 Jump Street. And it was just as fun as the last time
I liked
watched it.
Yeah, me too.
It was a film that I quite low expectations going into, but they more than surpassed it.
Ditto.
And Brie Larson is adorable.
Well, yes. That's a given. That's it. That's not to do a film. That's just a statement. Like puppies.
Hello to Brie Larson, by the
indeed.
Way. Well, you never know.
So, never knows. Big news over the weekend on the comic book side with the news that Edgar Wright has departed from Ant-Man, which is so Marvel look to be interfering in their director's visions.
Normally I wouldn't give a damn about this kind of thing, but as you say, there is interference now with what their directors are doing. That's not a good thing to do, clearly, because I mean, when they get somebody as interesting as Edgar Wright, and I've a mixed opinion on his films at the best of times, but he is interesting. He always brings plenty of energy and pizzazz to his films. So why they try and stop him from doing his thing on Ant-Man beggars belief.
Considering that they signed him on in 2006 on the back of the pitch that he put to them and on the strength of the script that they've had for the last 7 years. So rumors have it that it was that the script that was the issue. They were looking for more morality in the tale. So,
oh, good God.
It's about a thief. The lead character is a thief. So, I mean, there is going to be dubious morality there no matter what.
I mean, how much have Marvel's films made over the last few years that they feel they have to get morality into films?
The answer is several billion and counting.
I mean, surely the whole point of it. And like an Ant-Man film, to me, I'm not hugely aware of the character. I imagine it'd be one of those fairly low budget by Marvel standard films that could take off or could not take off. So why don't you just let him do it? I'm not a huge great fan. His films are a little overrated for me, but he does have his own way of doing things. It seems that he has his own style, his own vision. So, I mean, they knew what they were getting. They've seen his films before, surely.
Yeah.
It seems bizarre.
It is. It's very odd because they brought in, and again, this is going on Latina Review's Inside Story. They brought in some of their junior writers to rewrite the script. This is a script written by Joe Cornish and Edgar Wright.
It's a bit of an insult, isn't
it? Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but was the morality of Marvel's films to date a big selling point? What the heck? I mean, if anything, Captain America is just too damn squeaky clean.
Well, they tend not to kill people.
Right.
They tend to kill...
What happened in the Avengers then? Didn't they just level a city?
Yeah, but they evacuated all the people and aliens were what they killed. So
this is a Christian action movie.
Yeah, it's...
Oy, oy, oy.
Oh, don't. It'll be Passion of the Christ 2 all over again.
Crucify this. It's
disheartening. It seems Marvel are on such a peak, yeah. And then to go and do this. And then within 24 hours, news came that Drew Goddard had left the Daredevil TV series.
Ooh. Oh, I'd heard that, actually.
Yeah, so...
Which was an interesting name to attach to something like that. It could have got something.
Yeah.
But,
it seems he's pulling out to focus full time on his Spider-Man spin-off, Sinister Six.
But you would say that.
Yes, but even if it's true, I think he's picked the greater of two evils.
Well, I think Sony probably had some say in or some pressure involved there. So they left for different reasons. But as a 24-hour news cycle that for Marvel, that was not good. Although, considering that their competition tends to fumble the ball so badly.
Does it really matter?
It doesn't really matter. No.
I mean, their films, they can't do any wrong, really, at the moment. So.
Yeah, well, they're essentially, there's a homogeny to them. They're episodes in a long-running serial cinematic TV show.
They've got their ducks in their row. They know exactly what they're doing. But still, though, it doesn't bode well for individual films. I mean, as a universe, it seems to work very well. But it doesn't necessarily mean the next film up is going to be good.
Yeah.
Or maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe it's the one after that we're focusing on. I mean, who knows?
Well, there is that, because the focus... I mean, Guardians is next, but the primary trust is the new Avengers.
Sure, so. But Guardians is what I would consider Ant-Man to be, in the sense that if you have no real comic background or interest, which I don't really have, these are only slightly known to me.
Yeah.
So I presume they're on similar kind of pitch. And Guardians does look very interesting and look very odd in that way, so I wouldn't imagine Zantman would have gone down that route, or should have gone down that route. Yeah. Or maybe it will do. I mean, who knows?
Who knows?
But, I don't know.
We'll struggle to find somebody with as individual and interesting a voice.
You roll up with a few suitcases full of money and you'll get somebody.
But they don't seem to want yeah. that. They're going down the route of hiring TV directors lately, so, you know, they're getting in...
Alan Taylor for
Thor, and they also got in...
Which was the least interesting of these round two films.
I like Thor, actually. I like Thor of the ones that...
The Dark World.
Well, I liked it about as much as I like Captain America, which isn't saying much.
Captain America had the Russo brothers, who also came from TV, so it's a thing where they're going increasingly for the director for hire rather than the visionary.
So they're going for the safe pair of hands.
Well, isn't that just disappointing?
Well, I don't. I'm not going to lose much sleep about it. I mean, their films are fine.
I'm reminded of a Robin Williams punchliner here. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? Money. Lots and lots of money.
Yeah.
Isn't that the bottom line?
Indeed, it is. It always is.
And you know what? At this stage, whenever I bring up a line like that, I just feel like I'm repeating myself. Why on earth are they so motivated by this? You've made so much. Do one thing interesting. One.
I'd agree.
Greed, for want of a better word, is good.
And irony of ironies, Michael Douglas is in Ant-Man.
Well, there we go.
There you go. It all comes round.
I was kind of hoping he got go all deep ends on it now, but yeah, well.
Yeah.
In other news about backing up a truck full of money and related to Disney, is Gareth Edwards has signed on for the Star Wars spin-off.
Okay.
We don't really care, do we? I mean, this news is going to keep coming year on year relentlessly with Star Wars films.
No. Yeah,
but we'll wait and see.
I suppose it's just pointed because, besides all the Star Wars hype, he did just deliver a big box office hit with Godzilla. And you know our opinions on that already. And if you don't, you should listen to us two podcasts ago.
From the writer of the Book of Eli, doesn't exactly inspire confidence for me. But, you know, I'm sure people are lying around the block that has Star Wars and it'll get jumping just to hack out another piece of music and then we'll be there.
What the spin-off's on. So
does it really? Does anybody really care?
The rumor is that it's Boba Fett or Han Solo.
Oh, really? I was hoping for Jar Jar.
A Jar Jar origin story may not be popular.
Darth Maul would go for it. There's the only interesting character in
what
six
I would like
films
to see is them go back in time to the Old Republic, where they've based a lot of the video games. And there are
Liberty Hall.
But there's perfectly good individual stories to be told in this. This is a massive universe.
Oh, we know this is why. This is why we want Darth Maul.
Or
Darth Maul is still linked into the Skywalker saga. I want one that stands alone from the Skywalker saga.
So, do you know what? My feeling is this. I bemoan the fact that we actually have a phrase, Skywalker saga.
Yeah.
The only Skywalker saga I want to hear about are George Lucas's mortgage repayments, which I'm sure are finished by now and must have been ginormous.
He sold LucasArts to Disney for billions.
I know, my point.
But they'll make it all back, it doesn't matter.
We don't care. Right. Okay, Jay and I don't care. Niall is tripping over himself with excitement, which balances everything out.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, moving on to something that you do care about. Can.
Hey, finally, yes. Finally. And we're not, in our element, Jay.
And not rat of. As
indeed. Beautifully put. That may be the best link. The festival certainly this week, instead. I imagine. Yes.
Well, in a way, it does feel like the Wrath of Khan because I think a lot of people would agree, a few surprises.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they started off very well with Best Actor.
Well, Timothy, I was going to say they started off very well with the dog one that they awarded.
The palm dog.
Yeah.
What did get the palm dog?
I cannot remember.
It might have been Goddard's dog, but I can't remember.
Was it Goddard's dog? Oh dear, we can't remember who won the Palm Dog. Shame on us.
We don't really care.
Hello to Peter Bradshaw, we'll have a special, by the way. Forgive us.
We'll have a special podcast extra
with, about the Palm Dog.
Palm Dog.
But yes, as you're saying, best actor went to Timothy Spall for Mr. Turner.
Always brilliant, has been brilliant for so long now. It's finally getting recognition. He'd have to build a new awards cabinet, won't he, really? He's going to get a lot, I think.
Here's hoping.
He's fantastic, and I've been a huge fan for a long, long time. So good on him.
He's just wonderful to watch in anything, in any role, in any capacity. He's great.
Kind of wasted in Harry Potter, though, because
how many people are there?
It's an ensemble, though, isn't it? There's 50 characters.
He doesn't get a lot to do, though.
No,
but again, there's a lot of characters there.
He's just a face, though, isn't he? There's slightly recognition in these roles. But
and besides, you can't call yourself a proper British actor unless you've had a role in that. Unless you're Anthony Hopkins or Helen Mirren. Because everyone else is in those
and
things.
And the B-movie version of that, or TV shows, Game of Thrones, where all the actors haven't quite made it to the Harry Potter movies, all get to kick
Dame
that.
Judi Dench. And the...
Best Actress at
Cannes. Bit of a surprise again, I think.
Julianne Moore for Maps to the Stars. Marion Cotillard was the heavy favourite for this. And from what I've heard about Maps to the Stars, mixed reviews, but most critics would agree that she's the best thing in it.
Yes.
But then again, Julianne Moore is often the best thing in most of
the She's by far and away the best thing in Non-Stop.
I don't know what to say to that.
Do you remember when we had to talk about Non-Stop every week when it was in the top 10?
It was Non-Stop.
Those were bad times.
Yeah. We'll come back to the top 10 shortly. But hey, it's Julianne Moore winning awards. It doesn't happen often enough, and I'm glad.
Agreed.
We want more redheaded women winning awards.
Is that aimed at me?
Being a redheaded woman that you are.
He knows what I like. The Camera Door for Best Feature went to Party Girl, despite some rather poor reviews.
Yeah. Just some of the reviews I've read, but they weren't fans. A lot of people are saying no.
Yeah. Best Screenplay went to the Russian epic Leviathan, which I cannot wait to see. It's got some of the best reviews of the festival.
Yeah, it's on my must-see list.
Another film named Leviathan.
Not to be confused with the other Leviathan, which is a strange watch.
I haven't seen that long.
Ultimately, I'd say it's a worthwhile watch, but a very
strange
watch.
Last year's Leviathan, not the one that's the disaster film from a few years back. It's also called Leviathan.
Which one was that?
Isn't there an 80s movie called Leviathan?
It's a big, doomy, epic-sounding title. Of course,
we'll have a podcast extra delving into all the Leviathans as well.
And all films based on the Book of Leviticus.
Yes. Where are we going with this? Anyway.
I don't know. I'm still waiting for a biopic of Thomas Hobbes. That's all I know. Moving on, what else? The jury prize, very interesting. This is interesting.
A little sentimental in some ways, I think.
I think it shows what Cannes is going for here, is trying to balance between the old school and the new generation. It was shared between Jean-Luc Godard's Adieu au Langage and Mommy from Xavier Dolan.
guess.
It's amazing after this was announced how many people came out and said that they wished that Jean-Luc Godard was younger so that he could make a superhero film.
What do you even say to that?
Do you know what? If he was
that's akin to Woody Allen.
If he was 40 years younger, do you know what would happen? If he were 40 years younger, they'd offer him Ant-Man. No, they
maybe
wouldn't.
Offer it
He'd be too individual, wouldn't he? I wish. Yeah. Get Jean-Luc Godard, as he is now, to direct Ant-Man. There. I defy you, Hollywood. Do it.
Yeah. Defy away. They will.
It was nice to see Xavier Dolan doing well, because God knows that guy needs a break.
Well, it's... I've watched my second Dolan film this weekend. I Killed My Mother.
It was a busy weekend.
Yeah. It's pretty good as a debut goes. It's wrote the screenplay when he was 16. My good God, that's disgusting.
Yeah, if I was to film the film that I wrote when I was 16, chances are I wouldn't have as much success.
It's pretty good, and it's very much half formed in a sense. You could sense it's the first film, but after the majesty of Lawrence, anyways, I need to see more of his films. Badly.
Our friend Mr. Neary, not such a big fan of.
No, we had myself and him, Ronan, had a bit of a chat room.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Always funny.
No, it's always fun.
Another surprise was Best Director, which went to Bennett Miller for Foxcatcher. And this is one of the prizes that a lot of people had tipped the Darden brothers for, but no, they went with something which...
I'm glad, actually, because I heard really good things about it. I like Bennett Miller as a filmmaker, so I'm happy with this. I've heard great things about the film.
Yeah, apparently he's tree for tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, can't wait to see that
one. It's not that new, like, kind of newer American filmmakers that are hitting that level, like, kind of critical acclaim in the last while.
No. I don't know. The only thing is, his film so far... Capote, Moneyball, and now Foxcatcher. They're the kind of films that, say, the Academy goes for, because they usually involve strong performances. They're all based on true life stories.
Sure.
I don't know. I just felt the first two, at least, they were more about the performances than about anything to do with the direction. That's nothing against Miller.
I would agree to Capote in that regard. I think Moneyball's a little more than that. I think it's the world and how he sees a little more fleshed out, a little more sadness in it throughout the film. That
he made baseball statistics vaguely interesting, so I have to give him credit for that.
But isn't there something to be said for a director who allows his actors that sort of room?
True. Very true.
So.
I think he's a fine filmmaker. And I think something like that, an award like that, is not particularly going forward. I'd be very interested to see what he does in the next few years.
Mm.
This is now front runner for Oscars.
For what that's worth.
Yeah, but
the reviews have been terrific.
They have. I can't wait to see it. And another one I can't wait to see is the winner of the Grand Prix, which was Alice Rohrwacher's The Wonders, which was another big old hit with critics.
I've read a couple of sniffy reviews about it.
Really?
Yeah, one or two. That were saying it's a little... But it's Cannes, isn't it, in the sense
that... every film, no matter how good, is going to have its sniffy reviewers.
Yeah, true, very true. And,
a room full of French people.
Good old-fashioned xenophobia. Of course it was.
Yeah, we here at the Scano podcast do not advocate clichés. Yeah.
No, not at all.
In fact, we spit at them. Yes. Excuse me while I go stub out my Gauloise on a baby.
Good God. Anyway,
right.
Let's move on quickly from that.
And the Palme d'Or went to Nuribilge Ceylan's Winter Sleep. A popular, if not quite unanimous, winner.
It sounds exhausting.
3 hours and 18 minutes.
A film called Winter Sleep almost immediately sounds boring. I'm sorry. There's just something...
Well, don't judge the book by the cover.
I have to say, I'm kind of a bit with Niall on this one. I have to... The reviews I read of it almost sounded like the writers of them were forcing themselves to love it. In that this will eventually reward your patience, as opposed to if it was a different filmmaker or a different set of circumstances, they may be saying you could have knocked half an hour, 40 minutes or an hour out of it.
I've read a lot of reviews that have said that, though.
And now I like a lot of Once Upon a Time in Anatolia, but I think it's a little overrated as a film. I don't think it's a great film. I think it's a very interesting film with brilliant scenes.
Oh, it has absolutely gorgeous.
Some great stuff on it. It's stunning. But I don't think it's a great film, even though some of the scenes in it are extraordinary. So I'll see it.
Well, I'll definitely see it. But, I mean...
With some reservations.
There's a lot of caveats floating about in those reviews, so I suppose we have to take heed.
Yeah, and you also have to set aside an entire day to watch it.
Again, why is this a bad thing?
No, I'm just saying.
I don't mind a long film if it can justify its length.
Yes.
Now, that might be that Winter Sleep might not justify at all, but I'm still
there's
going, 90
minute films that don't justify their length.
But
I
what
mean,
came true. Out of Cannes last year that had length and had the buzz was Blue is the Warmest Color, and so,
oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
second year in a row they've picked the longest film in competition for the Palme d'Or.
I love Blue is the Warmest Color, and it's zip by, so there you go.
It did zip by. I have other problems with it though.
Yes, I know this is not perfect, no, but I really like it.
Me too. So that's
interesting.
Interesting list.
Overall, it's a couple of surprises, so that's good. But the Dardennes aside, it's a touch of greatest hits about it, and a couple of new ones, a couple of nods. I'd like to see a little bit more of a shake up in the films in competition, maybe. Yeah. And
I am disappointed the Dardennes didn't win anything, but as you say, it would have been absolutely cemented.
Else. I mean,
they've won two Palm Dogs, so
give them a Palm Dog.
Oh dear, they just need to actually put a film with a dog in it.
Yeah.
So we'll leave Cannes there and the news there, and we'll move on to the box office top 10.
Jay, do you want to throw out a jingle there?
No, I don't. Thanks you for offering.
So at 10, still in the charts despite earning just €15,000 this week, is Tarzan. Our Tarzan goes to space, comes back, and is awful.
Spoiler alert.
In 3D.
in 3D. Yeah, that's the icing on the cake there, isn't it?
We didn't care about this last week. We don't care about this week. The only good thing about it is it's not our favourite film out of the top 10, I guess.
Muppets Most Wanted.
Yes, so...
Oh, God, I mentioned this name.
No, I'm sorry. The Muppets Most Wanted is significantly better as a film.
But I haven't seen Tarzan, so I'm going to assume it's not until I see it.
Chances are Tarzan won't be here next week, but I probably thought that last week, so...
No, I think it'll probably be on.
At 9, down from last week's number 5, is The Two Faces of January.
Now, what you're saying last week, this is very clever counter-programming. Against the likes of Godzilla or X-Men or anything else, is just a quiet little adult thriller, and it's done relatively well.
For a mature audience.
Yeah. And Philip.
And Jay, if you go see it.
I haven't seen it. Yeah. You put me off, actually, a little bit.
The thing is, it's not particularly good. I mean, I've seen similar stuff done
better. Mr. Ripley, just rewatch it.
Pretty much. And okay. I will rewatch it because that film is wonderful.
I find it sad, though. The Philip Seymour Hoffman effect.
It's a very tragic film, anyway.
And Anthony Minghella, yeah.
Oh, now it got to. We all got kind of down there for a second. Come on, let's cheer up. Yeah, Two Faces of January. I've seen worse, but I've seen better, so, you know.
Respectable drop, 28%.
Yeah.
Still great screen average. It's making over €1,000 per location.
It'll finish up probably with something around 90,000 at the Irish box office, so not too bad.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, I think it'll hit the 100.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, it's got 2 weeks to hit the 100, and it will. So. Yeah, it's at 73, May 21 last
year. You know, if it does, I wouldn't complain too much.
I would. No, I wouldn't. I'm kidding.
At 8, and in its 6th week in the charts, and still swinging, is The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yay.
Now, the 6th week that joke is made, isn't it? It feels like it.
Oh, could be. But this time it netted €23,000. Yeah.
It's slipping.
Are you down 47%?
Yeah, but after 6 weeks, that hardly matters.
Well, not surprising, considering X-Men came out. That is direct competition.
Yeah, it's taking any kind of audience.
That's true. Exactly true. The same
but
audience.
It's done okay. I mean, it's 1.7 million. I don't think they're going to be complaining too much.
It's about 1.7 million I'd have wished it had made.
Yeah, it's 1.7 million, but that's compared to some of the other, you know, big blockbustery type titles, not hitting 2 million is a bit of a...
It's a bit of a letdown.
It doesn't really matter if it's 1.7 million. I mean, it's all relative in terms of the box office somewhere wild, I presume. It's pretty good.
Is it still, in terms of all of the Spider-Man, is the lowest grossing, even not adjusting for inflation. If you adjust for inflation, it's significantly lower.
Yeah. And it looks dreadful, so maybe that's what to do it. Who knows?
Oh, it's fun. It's just all over the place.
Yeah, but it just seems to prove the law of diminishing returns.
At 7.
Speaking of diminishing returns.
The Other Woman.
Yes. Well, yeah, it's made a million quid.
It has, just over a million.
What are you going to say?
Dreadful film. That's what I'm going to say. But
it doesn't matter.
No.
It seems not to matter. There you go.
Yeah, it's...
The insatiable appetite for these kind of films shows no sign of abating, really.
There's at least 5 bad movies in the top 10. That's...
Solidly
disturbing.
Bad.
Yeah.
That is.
But it's not surprising, though. for most weeks here, there's going to be bad films making money. How it happens is beyond me, but it always seems to happen.
And then something good, like Frank,
will
disappear
without trace. Yeah,
it is gone.
It's insane. But yeah. I'm not saying that general public has bad taste, but they
have
bad taste.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Anyway. Hello, we love you. Hello to the general public.
Yes, please keep listening. We love you, really. Honest.
At six is Rio 2.
Yes.
So animation still doing well. It's boxed up 16%.
Oh, it's actually gone up
it
again.
It was a bad weekend.
Clearly.
Weather-wise, it was a bad weekend. And so people went into the
That's
cinemas.
Really, really sticking, though.
So,
isn't it?
So what you're saying is, as long as the weather is bad, Rio 2 will stay up. If Rio 3 is released next December, it will take over the earth.
Rio 3 is released tomorrow, it'd make a fortune.
Releasing a film like Rio in the winter months would be genius, because it's a colourful, summery, warm type film, and people would flock to it.
But then again, Frozen was released in December, and look at that.
Yes, well, that's true. But Frozen is a warm, emotional film. It's a warm of a different type.
Yay, let it go.
Oh.
Ba-dum-tsh.
This is as good as my humour gets this evening.
Good lord.
At five, and on an equal level of humour, Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore's new film, Blended.
Thank you.
The wonderful thing about this is it has died on its behind everywhere.
Yeah.
It's bad in the States for.
Oh, yeah,
it's
his second lowest opening. Yeah.
Well. And he's made some terrible films. So to be down there.
Yeah, and this week, on its opening weekend, it's only made 63,000.
So we could see that going bye bye pretty quickly, one would imagine.
With any hope.
Word of mouth isn't going to do any
favors. You know what?
Anyway.
This is the kind of statistic that puts my faith back in humanity, back in the general public.
We love
Welcome
the
back,
public.
Thank
There's
you.
Only one redeeming feature about that film.
Drew Barrymore.
90 minutes long or something.
Terry Crews.
I love Terry Crews.
Yes. Terry Crews is great.
I hope
the
you got a big paycheck
for it. Is dreadful. Oh, it is just an appalling, sappy, schmaltzy rubbish at the highest order.
Niall is not a fan, by the way.
I swear to God, his kid, right, one of his kids, a girl, is called Espen, right?
It's a Danish name.
Espen?
The reason she's called Espen is because she's named after his favourite TV station.
ESPN.
Yes.
Oh, good lord. That's the sophistication of
that's
humor.
That's the level of the joke.
I want to kill Adam Sandler now. Although I've always said that. Except for Punch Drunk Love.
Except for Punch Drunk Love.
Let's move on from that for if one of us gets angrier.
Oh, no. So the next one is only going to make me angrier.
No, so that was the first new entry of the week. This is the second new entry of the week. Postman Pat enters at number four.
See, get that waiter. I need
see,
a
whiskey. See, isn't that worrying? Like, nearly 100,000 for a film that I've yet to hear one good thing about.
Animation.
Yeah, I know. But isn't that exactly what it is? Animation. It doesn't matter. It actually doesn't seem to matter what. You could animate anything and stick it in the cinema and it seems to make
Well, that's the thing. It's people looking for something to do with the kids on a
bring
wet weekend.
Bring them to the park.
On a wet weekend.
Put a raincoat on them and bring them to the park.
Or just stay at home.
Bring
get a
museum.
DVD. Get a DVD of Singing in the Rain.
Or Finding Nemo. Anything.
Or anything. The Lion King. Princess Mononoke. Anything.
If these children are anything like my nieces and nephews, they watch Disney movies on repeat. So the chance to get them out of the house to watch something new is appreciated.
Just get a Studio Ghibli box set. That's all kids need.
Exactly.
Like.
Grave of the Fireflies will traumatize children.
I saw it in the lighthouse last year. I came
me.
Out reeling.
I was weeping and I couldn't stop myself.
Oh, it's amazing. But God almighty.
Good Lord.
And I knew people wouldn't give me weird looks because everybody was weeping.
I weep at my neighbor Totoro, but that's because it's so much fun.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Everybody buy a Studio Ghibli box set. It's the best investment you will ever make.
And chances are, if I went to Postman Pat, I'd be weeping for different reasons.
You should go and review it, Ron. You should go and see it.
Yeah.
No.
Philip, go and see it.
We have discussed this.
We are ordering you to go and
see
it.
I have too much self-respect to go and watch Postman Pat. Yes, I do.
I hope you don't.
I do. It's part of my problem, really.
Okay.
At three, Bad Neighbours, still doing exceptional
business. Yeah, it's hard to argue. 1.5 million and still going pretty strong 3 weeks in.
I think you might be right about your prediction for a box office breakout hit of the summer.
Oh, yeah, easily.
There's always one.
Yep, it's almost always a comedy. So
yep.
The only thing is, A Million Ways to Die in the West still could do it.
And
it's a direct
know.
Competition in some ways.
Yeah.
It is. That's coming out soon, and 22 Jump Street is coming out soon. Now, 22 Jump Street is certainly closer to this in terms of the audience and it's the kind of material that it's involved. Whether it'll do as well, I'd hope so.
22 Jump Street is less direct competition. Well, 22 Jump Street has the built-in audience of 21 Jump Street behind it, whereas the True. Other two don't come off anything. The audience for Ted is not is different than the audience for A Million Ways to Die in the West. A comedy western is...
But it does have a simple... Like, it's from the writers of Ted plastered all. Like, I mean, it's,
yeah, I know,
it's
Ted are very
Ted strong. Is more. There's more Ted on those posters than there is any of the original characters in this thing.
All they need to do is to pull up a picture of Giovanni Ribisi. That's all I want.
Yeah, anyway, we'll get to that. But yeah, Bad Neighbors, good on them. Hmm. They released it at perfect time, and it's done the business. Like,
yeah.
At two, down from last week's number one, but still doing great business. Yes, is Godzilla.
I read a great tweet there last week where somebody said they went to see Godzilla in the States. And any time anybody actually referred to the monster as Godzilla, the audience laughed. When the audience is laughing at the title of the film, you know you've got a problem.
Why? I'd say that says more about the audience than anything, isn't it? I mean, why would they laugh at the title?
Maybe it's the way Ken Watanabe pronounces it.
Well, he pronounces it Godzilla.
As in the proper Japanese way.
Yeah, exactly. Godzilla. Maybe that's the thing.
Maybe.
Well, there's no Z in the Japanese language, so...
Gojira.
Yeah.
Gojira, yeah. What I will say about it, though, like, it's just a shy of €1 million.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's already and passed it. Yeah.
They were saying, I was reading, I think, a couple of days ago, so this already happened, that it's pretty much on the verge of making back its original budget in the States on its own.
Wow.
$160 million, just sailing past that.
I don't think anybody expected anything different.
Oh, I mean, but just in, but that's going to fly. I mean, that's going to go on and on and on.
Yeah, it
and
is.
Worldwide, I kind of, I have no idea what it's going to be.
You're looking at 600, 650.
The only thing is now, presumably we're going to get a sequel.
Yes.
And Gareth Edwards won't be directing it.
No, Gareth Edwards will be directing it. He's going to do it after he does the Star Wars film. So we're looking at a 2018 release for the sequel.
Well, at least
that's a long way away.
It's 4 years.
To be putting the sequel together. I mean, this could be just because this could be successful for various other reasons other than a love for Godzilla. This might be just happened at the right time, etc., etc. Who knows what 4 years will bring if you don't cash in it.
Yeah.
True.
Be interesting to see. Mm. It's not a great film, but, you know, still.
Yeah.
Good on them.
It has problems, but it's still an entertaining time at the cinema.
Yeah,
just don't think too much about it.
Sound design is.
But I want more than sound design from a film. It should complement a film.
Yeah, especially if you're going to promise characters and not deliver them.
Yeah, sorry.
But anyway, we've ranted about that.
But there is great sound design, I will agree.
And in, with a bullet, at number one, with the third highest opening weekend of the year, X-Men Days of Future Past. So, phenomenal return.
It proves one thing. People like this franchise.
They really do.
Despite its highs and lows, and there have been some really low lows. Hello, X-Men Origins Wolverine. People still like these characters.
Let me ask you something, though, right? I haven't seen the film. You guys have seen the film.
Yes.
I am thinking about seeing it for two reasons. One, because it's going to be in the top 10 for quite a while.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be talking about this for probably for the next 6 weeks.
Minimum.
So I'd like to have at least seen it. So if I don't like it, I can go against you guys and say, no, you are both wrong. Or else I agree with you. Second reason. Do we need to see... I've seen the first class, but I've kind of forgotten it.
Right.
Do we need to watch other films to see this?
Just the first two. And I think you said before you liked the first two.
I did.
I say they're both.
I don't know.
I really want to skip the Wolverine films. Please don't make me watch.
You don't
please
have
don't
to,
make me watch.
You don't have to watch.
You don't have to watch either Wolverine.
You really don't have to watch the second one.
The more I think about it, the second one's kind of inconsequential, really, isn't it?
Yeah. The only thing is that when he wakes up in the future, in his future bedroom, there are Japanese artifacts around the room.
But I do know that there is a part set in Japan. That's all you need to know. That's what I'm saying.
No.
So first two movies, is that what we're saying?
First two movies and First Class. You definitely have to see First Class.
I did see First Class,
then you're fine.
I really didn't like it and I don't fancy watching it.
I'm not a huge fan either. Because, this is better.
But because it retcons Tree so strongly.
I've seen
and
the third one.
If you want to go, if you want that punch the air moment when it completely screws Tree over, you've got to.
It is, admittedly, those last 10 minutes are just one big glorious F you to Brett Ratner.
Right,
and I'm off
of that. I'm sorry, I have a little bit of a problem with both the joy everybody's taking with that and the fact that it is, because the third film, like, it exists, they bankrolled it. It was part of the universe. Then it's like, oh no, we're just ignoring them.
Well, the third one is the most successful. The third one's the one that made the most money.
It's like, oh, let's just pretend this is happening. It's like, Sorry, can you do that? You I mean, they can do it. They're doing it.
Well, they've
but
done
I'm not sure I'm a fan of that kind of thing.
Well, I think you can if you feel, and a lot of fans feel, and you ask most anybody involved, they will say that part three really just did a lot of so much damage.
It's a dreadful
to
film. I'm not arguing the point.
But not only is it a dreadful film.
This is unique to superhero movies, though, isn't it? It doesn't exist, this idea of kind of taking something out
of any kind of... We've never seen this before. We've seen it quite commonly in comics, but we've never seen it in a filmatic universe where they have essentially said the first three films didn't happen, the two origin films didn't happen, this is now your new reality.
So is this a reboot?
In a way, essentially.
Because it sounds like they're rebooting a series already without actually saying they're rebooting a series. And people are going along with this without anybody.
The only film that now happens in the cinematic universe post Days of Future Past is First Class. None of the rest of them...
All right.
The rest of them exist in an alternate timeline.
But can I say...
Spoiler alert.
Can I say something there?
Yeah.
Go on.
Spider-Man... The Amazing Spider-Man series, the last two... These two films, I've got a lot of grief of... Is this too soon for a reboot of the Raimi franchise?
Yeah.
Yet, is X-Men getting a pass? Even though they've made a load of films up until
recently. It gets a pass for two reasons.
Because it says screw you to the
third one. But I'm not sure I'm a fan of that idea, though. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
It gets a pass for two reasons. Number one, the reboot of Spider-Man, it feels so cynical because it comes so soon.
And it's almost beat for beat. From the first one.
This is trying to take the original plots in new directions.
Okay.
Like a fresh start, when a fresh start is absolutely needed.
And it retains what's interesting about the original trilogy. So you have the original trilogy characters. They're still there. The actors are still there.
Isn't that ultimately, though, very cynical? In the sense of, like, we're taking this, we're saying we're starting again, but... To keep you happy and familiar, we're going to bring these over here and show you them. So you'll have all this comfort and familiarity.
Yeah, oh no,
and
it
then,
is.
But,
it is that.
But whilst we're doing that, we're just going to cut a line across here and separate that out and say, no, that don't forget all that.
But
that's
look at it matter. This way.
That sounds very cynical to me.
It might sound cynical, but you're separating wheat from chaff that way.
Yeah, but, and it's much the same as what the 2009 Star Trek did as well. Here is the character that you love, Shatner's Kirk, and he's still Shatner's Kirk, and here is new Kirk. He's Kirk, but he's also new awesome Kirk. You know,
yeah, but
so
that's that kind of Starfleet Academy kind of idea has been floating around for a long time, hasn't it? That they're going to show the origins of the Star Trek, how they all came together, etc., etc.
Yeah,
I mean that idea has been floating around for quite a bit of time.
But so is Days of Future Past. Days of Future Past is from a 1991 comic book.
Well, I would argue that the first Star Trek film, though the newer films. Isn't trying to change anything in the sense. The second one, though, there's a different argument you made, but the first one is just an origin story, essentially.
Yeah,
isn't
no, that's
I mean,
true.
Like, it's not going. We're not changing. We're not going back to say this doesn't exist, or we're changing. Like, whereas
no,
the second one, there's a problem with
it. It isn't setting out to intentionally change everything because the originals went badly. It's going out to change everything because it's trying to make its own path. This is a course correction.
Okay. But I'm going to go see it. I'll probably catch up on the earlier, because I like the Singer ones, so they're very good. And the fact that Singer's behind the camera here makes me feel better,
and
because he's a better filmmaker than anybody else has touched this.
Because it's got the singular scene of the year in it.
Yes.
You need to see it for that,
definitely.
Too.
Well, there's always a showstopper of a scene in all the Singer X-Men, by the sounds of that. The first two have it as well.
Certainly.
So I'm going to go back and watch the other two movies and go see this movie because you guys have said I should. And because I should, and I'll be talking about it for weeks. Anyway, sorry, I needed to get into that a bit,
that is absolutely
a very valid point. But in terms of reboots, I will say this. I mean, you think of all those other origin stories, you know, showing the young whatever character.
Yeah.
Here, this is like the ultimate follow through. You've seen the old guys, you've seen their origins, now, this is how the one becomes the other.
Okay. I'll see the film, and then I suppose we can talk about it a bit differently then, because I'll have actually watched the bloody thing.
It's taken a few people by surprise, which I'm kind of glad to see. I mean, I like it. I won't say I love it, but, it's...
All right, I'll check it out.
Yeah.
So, we're moving on from the box office top 10 and into the new releases for this week.
Do we imagine any of these will topple X-Men?
Possibly.
I don't.
Should... Well, I...
There's some strong competition.
Yeah, this is a big week.
Can I ask though, are all these films, like particularly the first three that we're going to talk about, definitely being released this week?
Yeah.
If they are, which they are,
yeah.
Why haven't I heard any? Like, where are the reviews? Where are the thing? There's nothing.
One of them, the first one we'll talk about, which is Disney's Maleficent, is out Wednesday at 28th, so the day that this podcast will go live. And it, reviews are embargoed until midnight of the Tuesday the 27th.
That's not a good sign.
Bode well.
No, it does not.
So I have some familiarity with what the story is, with what the reviews are going to be like, and yeah.
Well, all I got to say is I read up a bit of it online today. Any film that there's 8 days of reshoots doesn't bode well, generally speaking,
no,
in my opinion.
Indeed not. It's a pity because the material
the
is
idea
interesting.
It is.
The idea of telling the story of Sleeping Beauty from Maleficent's point of view, the evil witch.
Yeah, no, that is... And having Angelina Jolie
Looks great in that role. But you know, one great performance and a great costume do not a good film make.
The whole thing sounds a little chunky. I might be surprised if there's great reviews for it. I don't know how it's going to do. It's not... Like, where's your Sleeping Beauty audience? I mean, I don't know. Like,
I don't know. So when was Sleeping Beauty out? Like, nearly 60 years ago now.
I mean, other than Anne Fanny going to see it, I don't know who's around for this.
Yeah, and by the way, can I point out that the original Sleeping Beauty, the animated one, not as good as you remember. Well, the character of Sleeping Beauty is dull.
I say also, though, as controversial as this kind of sound, I'm not a fan, generally speaking, of all the old Disney films.
Some of them are their hit and miss.
They are.
More than some people are keen to admit.
I'm fine with admitting that.
Maleficent is the best of the classic Disney villains.
She is.
She is. Because she is properly scary.
Yeah. I do remember that.
I mean, as a kid, that's, you know, the idea of your green-skinned, black-hooded witch. That's that's bloody scary.
Yeah, no. That,
but so, you have a problem with a film like the original Sleeping Beauty when your villain is the most interesting character.
Yeah.
I mean, Sleeping Beauty, what do you know? She sleeps. Prince Charming, not particularly interesting either.
No.
But she and the three little fairies who look after Sleeping Beauty, they're the biggest things going for it.
Shrek could tell you all that. I mean, what you need to know about this, really. I mean,
yeah.
I'm going to probably tell it better than I imagine this film.
No, but taking a fairy tale and telling it from the point of view of the bad
it's a great idea.
Is a wonderful, wonderful idea.
And they dropped the ball by the sounds of it.
So Maleficent is apparently quite disappointing in terms of its representation of women and this representation of the character. So it's...
To be honest, I'm not surprised it's disappointing considering the similar treatment that that things like Alice of Wonderland have got. Now, that's an abysmal film. Maleficent couldn't be quite as bad as that. Famous last words.
Yeah.
But I'm not surprised. I'm just not.
It's never a good sign when the studio embargoes to the night of before the release date.
No, plus 8 days of reshoots. Because these things never work out.
No,
the next film out, which is out on Friday, Edge of Tomorrow, they had no problem with people reviewing it, with getting the reviews out immediately because it's getting 4 and 5 stars across the board.
These are surprisingly solid reviews. I can't, for something that looks so generic, they seem to have done something very clever. You know, take however many influences you want. But if you put them together the right way, you could have gold.
Well, yeah. I've two kind of different lines of thought on this. I think the reviews have been very good and very generous.
4-star review my on worry, Scanner, so.
My worry about this is, and I said similar about Godzilla, is that there's this thing where films are almost, if intentionally or otherwise, kind of before the release, before we hear anything about them, going, oh, this is not going to work, this is going to be a disaster, this is going to be whatever, which I heard a lot of about Edge of Tomorrow in particular. They're like, oh, this is going to be generic, you've seen it all before, etc., etc. And then when it comes out and it turns out not to be a disaster, but coherent and works well, that maybe the overreaction, the other end of it, might be
so
a little hyped as opposed to necessarily looking at it objectively in its own terms.
It's the World War Z effect,
basically. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, now, admittedly, World War Z is not anything special. It's just
it really
not
isn't.
Great.
But because it isn't as bad as
it got
enthusiastically
reviewed.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think there might be an element to that.
Maybe.
And it happened here with the Lone Ranger as well, where because it got such a bad reviews in the US, the UK and Ireland seem to need to say that actually it's not that bad.
We know more about your Western culture than you do.
Yeah.
And he didn't really, because it's not a couple of great sequences aside, it's not a very good film.
It's tonally all over the place.
Oh,
God, there's some awful, awful, awful scenes in that film.
And I was surprised at the reviews here of it. Because I'm like, really? I mean, it's not that I consider like a group views in America the word of God, or even here. But what I found interesting from the States, the reviews here about that particular film, Lone Ranger, was that it's like, it was a sniffy kind of, what do the American critics know kind of element to it. And then I watched it and I was like, he probably knew more than the British and British critics, in my opinion.
Maybe. But
so I worry. But the other thing, sorry, just to say about Edge Tomorrow, I like Doug Liman. I think he's a good filmmaker. I think he's an interesting filmmaker. A little all over the place sometimes. But I think he can pull something together. So I'd give it a chance under that regard. And Cruise is generally solid and reliable enough.
This is the thing about Tom Cruise. I love the fact that he's now quite clearly a sci-fi nerd because he goes for these kind of projects. You look back on his CV, clearly he just loves this kind of stuff. So
I want to see more Magnolia. But anyway, we're not going to see that.
We're not going to see that. But if he keeps doing stuff that is at least solid, and it could be just that, and I would be perfectly happy with that.
As would I, but I think 4 and 5 sounds, 4 and 5-star reviews sound very enthusiastic.
Admittedly, I haven't seen any 5-star reviews, but if there are some...
There are some around the place, but 4 is the common one.
Yeah, 4 is a standard kind of thing I've seen. I've seen anything less than that, really.
Well, none of us have seen it.
Yeah, I know.
Who knows?
I've seen it tomorrow, so...
But as a concept, just as that, I'm not necessarily getting at the film itself, I just think there's an issue with how films are perceived before the release and then after release, and there's a relief element to it that I think the reviewers make it an extra star, is what I'm thinking.
Every film has to be approached with an open mind. That's the
The objective logic should be approached to every film, and nothing gets excused just because it's a blockbuster.
Yeah, true. That's
how I'd see it.
So, one of the big comedy releases of the year, A Million Ways to Die in the West, is also out on Friday. So
It's a bloody long title, isn't it?
A Million Ways to Die in the West.
It's a little exhausting.
They're not marketing it on the title. What they are marketing it on, and the fact that the little shit is everywhere in the advertising, is the fact that it comes from the makers of Ted.
They're also advertising it using the strength of Dr. Emma Brown from Back to the Future.
Really?
Who has a cameo appearance in the film.
Great. If that's your strongest gag, my hopes are not high. My hopes are not high for this anyway. I don't care for Seth MacFarlane's brand of comedy. The first few seasons of Family Guy, sure. But after that, it's the same gag over and over again.
Increasingly misogynistic, generally speaking, as a rule. I find it a little exhausting. It could be better than... I don't know.
This film is definitely going to underserve its female characters, as most Westerns do.
As most Seth MacFarlane projects do, I would say as well.
And I find that quite disappointment. I find this quite a disappointment when you consider the kind of talent that's involved. Charlize Theron.
Amanda Seyfried as well. Sarah Silverman.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are...
Fine actresses.
They
deserve much better characters
than anything that could be supplied here.
Even the actors are quality as well. Giovanni Ribisi, Liam Neeson.
Neil Patrick Harris, but the thing is,
Seth MacFarlane will only ever be Seth MacFarlane. Liam Neeson will always be Liam Neeson.
That's
Oscar Schindler.
No argument.
Yeah. The simple point is this: I know what I'm expecting from this, but even if it turns out to be fine, if you want a witty, subversive take on westerns from a modern point of view, go watch Rango.
Oh, Rango.
Or Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles.
Either of the two.
I have no problem making the claim that Rango's probably going to be better than this.
Neither do I.
I think possibly Young Guns is going to be better than this.
No, Young Guns 2 Blaze of Glory, surely. Anyway, let's leave that one alone.
Yes.
We'll debate that in another podcast section. Young Guns versus Young Guns 2 Blaze of Glory.
There's a debate.
Of course there is.
Desperado versus Silverado.
Desperado.
Oh, don't stand the ball.
Oh, I'm glad that someone out there is still remembers Silverado. Bless you.
Thank you, though.
John Cleese in a Western. We all needed that.
We did.
They're both not very good films.
No, they're not. But still, a lot of fun.
Unique films in their own way.
Which is more than could be said for Once Upon a... For A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Oh, Once Upon a Time, A Million Ways to Die in the West. We don't care about
something like that. The point is, we don't like the title.
Yeah, we don't.
We probably won't like
the
film either. But we'll come back to you.
But it's not made for you, Philip.
Then,
well, it should be.
Unlimited release this week as the new Irish film Jimmy's Hall from director Ken Loach.
We're actually just sitting outside the lighthouse where a preview screening is happening as we speak.
Yes, yeah, the premiere tonight.
Oh, so the premiere.
There we go.
As we were talking about it on our Cannes report last week, mixed reviews, pretty standard for a Loach film. You know the politics before you go in, you know the viewpoints. Yeah. So it depends on whether you're a Loach fan.
If you like Loach, you'll like this, I think. Pretty I think it's going to... He's preaching to converted.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's a nice film. That's
especially...
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
It's a nice film.
It's a nice film.
I'm always very immediately distrustful of films that are being described as nice, I have to say.
It is. It's got that proper... It's a well-made film. It's just a nice watch. It is.
I'd be interested in seeing that, because how many Ken Loach films... With all great respect to the filmmaker, but how many Ken Loach films can you think of as being nice? I mean, they're great, some of them, but they're not necessarily pleasant.
No, that is true. No. This one is...
Maybe he's mellowing in his old age.
Yeah.
Maybe.
There is still the politics there. It is still very much...
That is Ken Loach. There's not politics there.
It's got some great performances. Andrew Scott is great as he usually is.
You have a real thing for Andrew Scott, don't you?
It's the voice. He's Moriarty in Sherlock.
I wish you could see this, folks. He's gone weak of the knees now.
Just before we go any further, Elementary is far superior to Sherlock. Anyway, I'm moving on.
Controversial. Moving on.
Moriarty in
moving
Sherlock
on
is significantly better than Moriarty in
disagree.
Elementary.
I disagree.
We are not discussing Sherlock's here.
That's a podcast extra.
We'll never be able to keep up with all of these. Are you keeping a list?
Locked. Also in limited release this week is Omar, which showed at the Gems in Dublin International Film Festival.
Got pretty good reviews, as I recall. I didn't see it myself, alas.
No, I missed it. Heard decent enough things. A little worthy, maybe, but decent enough from what I heard. I haven't seen it.
I'm looking forward to catching it.
You know, busy week committing and all that.
And then in the IFI only this week is Venus in Fur.
The latest from Roman Polanski.
Yes.
I haven't cared about a Polanski film in a long time. I'm not sure I'm going to catch
really?
This.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to bring it up because I know how a lot of people feel about The Ghost Rider.
Yes, it's dreadful.
It's not dreadful. It's fine. It's a servable little thriller.
It is a dreadful thriller.
It is not dreadful.
Even by lame thriller standards, it's dreadful.
I think you're overly harsh.
Oh, I hate it. I absolutely hate it.
Look, you're entitled to hate some Polanski.
Very Blair.
Of course it's Blair. That's the point.
It's as bland as bland can be.
I think it's got styles to spare.
Oh, God, no.
It is Pierce Brosnan, though, you know. And so, you know, he turned up at 10 Downing Street
Pierce
and people
Brosnan
went to him.
Was the only thing
be living here,
I
you know?
Would believe in the film because I like him. But
not Olivia Williams. She's fantastic.
Hugh McGregor is decent as well.
I'm sorry, it's just a plodding mess.
It's not made for you, Jay.
No, it's
the
not.
The point is, this is...
Don't even get me started on Carnage.
Oh, yeah, Carnage is extremely stagey. But,
Carnage is a Spider-Man villain.
Now, for... The point is, what I've heard about Venus in Fur is that a lot of the same complaints as Carnage. It's also based on a stage play, so you're getting a lot of the same stagey feel.
Two-hander.
Yeah. Matthew Amalric and Polanski's own wife, Emmanuelle Seigner.
I think we're getting back to Bitter Moon territory, aren't we, kind of thing, a little
bit. Oh, careful now. Yeah. Let's hope not.
I'd rather watch Moon, in fairness.
You know?
Polanski has made some amazing films, but not since I was a child.
Hey, I never called Ghost Rider amazing.
No. Oh, you love it.
It's fine.
It's not fine.
Oh, good grief. I'm not arguing this with you right now.
Right.
That'll be a podcast extra, folks.
Moving on, there's a couple of re-releases this week. And the IFI, we have a Farewell to Arms.
This I want to see because I've never seen it.
It's kind of a lesser, younger brother to All Quiet on the Western Front.
Okay.
It's a bit more... It's fine. It's a bit more preachy in its politics. Yeah.
This is like me calling Jimmy's Hall a nice film. This is film.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
It's
You're not selling me, Philip. I'm going to be honest with you.
It is. It's fine. It's worth a watch. I'd love to see it on the big screen myself, so I probably will pop along.
Oh, okay.
Also, this Saturday, in the Lighthouse, at 10:30 in the evening, Stop Making Sense, The Talking Heads.
You have got to... This is the must-attend event of the weekend, folks. The Lighthouse do this every couple of months. They show Stop Making Sense. If you haven't seen it, it's Jonathan Demme's seminal concert film of The Talking Heads. And if you're not a Talking Heads fan, well, shame on you. But even if you're not, come along. It is the best... night out you will have in Dublin this weekend.
I'm because not doing it.
What?
Because I don't dance, and I don't like the idea of people dancing when I watch a movie. But that's just me.
Go ahead. Everybody
else should, because everybody will be up
you're
dancing.
You're the mayor of Footloose Town, aren't you?
You are, aren't you?
I can assure you I'm the quite opposite the mayor of Footloose Town. I'm the mayor of the Cornersville.
The point is that it is one of the greatest concert films ever made, if not the greatest.
I do really like it.
And, what you're going to say, tell me Last Waltz?
I do.
Gimme Shelter?
I do love Last Waltz. No, but Gimme Shelter is where I was going to go.
Yeah, but neither of those films is as much fun or as much charm as Stop Making Sense.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Demme behind the camera. Jonathan Demme behind the camera.
Jonathan Demme, it is Demme's best film. It's unbelievable fun. Come along to the Lighthouse. That's Saturday night, 10:30. Be there. Great night, guarantee.
Or B Square.
Or B Square.
So moving into...
It's B Square.
Different band altogether.
Yes.
Moving into podcast special time.
Oh, yes.
A curveball, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. We're going to look at the at today's announcement of the Empire 301 Best Films of All Time. This is voted for by readers of Empire magazine. It's going to feature in this month's Empire magazine. But it's already up online. They have released what the list is. And some of them are...
Interesting choice.
Bad.
Let's just point out one thing. Okay, this is a vote for the greatest films of all time, voted for by the public. That's an automatic misnomer. It's not the greatest films of all time. It's the
films.
It's the most popular. It's the ones that people count as their favorite.
So many,
which is very different
as well. Which is bizarre.
It is ridiculous. So, I mean, if you're looking for films that you will like, by all means, peruse them. But you know, there's
you will get good films from it.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
No, there's a run here, right? And it goes from 220 down to 210.
I'll
right?
Look here.
It goes. The Maltese Falcon, The Sting, right? So there's no argument. They are brilliant films. The Incredibles, right? Fine.
Yeah, fine.
On the Waterfront.
Marvelous.
My Neighbor Totoro.
Wonderful.
Suspiria.
Excellent. Great
The
fun.
Seven Seal.
Classic.
Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, yeah.
Cool Hand Luke.
Yep.
Rushmore.
Yeah.
And Miller's Crossing. They are all good films.
They are.
Some are great.
That order is...
Bizarre.
Is all.
Well, look at it this way, right? Even looking at the first page of the list, all right? You have the likes of, say, in the first 20 films, you get such wonderful films
from
as...
300, that's most of one.
Well, yeah, from 300, yeah. Say, you get great films like The Bridge on the River Kwai, In the Mood for Love, Andrei Rublev...
Man of Steel.
Yeah, and then you get that mixed up with Man of Steel,
Prometheus.
300, and Prometheus.
And Love Actually.
Do you know what this is about?
This is more ammunition for those crazy truthers on the internet. They're going to say Prometheus is the best Alien film. They're going to be saying it's in the list.
Alien is at number 20.
Yeah, Alien is way ahead of it.
No, but they're going to, the fact that's 19. In the list.
Alien is 21. Alien
Prometheus
is, ahead
is
of
not
Alien.
Even in the top 100 Alien films of all time. It's
It is. And beautiful. This list, approach with severe caution.
It does throw up some nice side-by-side comparisons where you have, because there's a lovely one here where at 26 you get Casablanca and at 25 you get Schindler's List. So, I mean, they are...
There's a nice simpatico element there, but
I like that
as much as I adore Schindler's List, and I do, Casablanca is still the better film.
No, but the one that gets me is number 34, Forrest Gump, number 33, Citizen Kane.
That's foul. Forrest Gump, in case I've never ranted about it before, but I will take this opportunity, Forrest Gump is sickly, sentimental, codswallop. It has Tom Hanks giving the most base performance of mental disability I've ever seen. And it's embarrassing. It is just foul.
There's here we go, right? Number 81, Inglourious Bastards, because we have so much time. We've had so much time to consider that as a great film. Right, besides Some Like That Hot, which is fine. Then go back up the list. The Wolf of Wall Street is number 85. Django Unchained is number 86. I mean, why are these people smoking? I mean, it's insanity.
Number 45. So the 45th best movie of all time is Skyfall. Skyfall is not the best Bond movie of all time.
It's actually my favourite Bond
I'd argue that.
But I'm not a Bond film.
But you know what? Even the best Bond film, it does not belong on this list.
All I'd say is I did a quick tad up earlier on today. 20 films out of the 301 films are subtitled. So, most of the people that have written and added to this list have not seen enough movies.
It's true.
And certainly have not seen enough movies from different countries.
I mean, I've checked out the list myself. I had to look for a few particular titles. Badlands isn't on there. The Passion of Joan of Arc isn't on there.
There's a lot of good films on it.
L'Atelance isn't on there.
Well, I'm sorry. As much as I love Joss Whedon, and I do love Joss Whedon, Serenity is not the 90th best film of all time.
Nor is Avengers Assemble the 12th best film of all time.
12th?
I shit you not.
Hang on a second. Let me have a look at that.
No, no, it's not. Avengers Assemble is the 16th best.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Excuse me.
Good God, people.
I'm sorry. Avengers Assemble is next to The Godfather Part 2.
It's between The Godfather Part 2 and Back to the Future.
Good night and good luck.
I love Back to the Future.
We all do, but come on. But again, that's the thing. That's what this list is. Favourites. Not greatest, favourites. If you're going with that caveat, you're fine. But just do not treat
it. And you will find some really interesting films on the list.
There's a lovely run here, 54 to 51.
Wow, four films.
A Clockwork Orange, The Shining, Gone with the Wind, 12 Angry Men.
Right. Clockwork Orange, fantastic film, albeit quite dated.
Yeah.
Gone with the Wind, overblown.
12 Angry Men is great.
It is.
Pan's Labyrinth's very overrated. Pan's Labyrinth is the first film at number 50 that's subtitled. There's none in the top 50.
Bar that.
You have to hit 50 before you see one with a different angle.
Yeah.
And Gravity. Labyrinth is a low rate.
Gravity is 35th.
Gravity is in it?
It's number 35.
It's not even the best space film released in the week it was released.
No.
Sorry.
Probably was.
Okay, probably. But that month, say. That month.
That month, maybe, yeah. Because it's awful. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. So, the only reason we bring this up is because we know there's a list that will get a lot of coverage and it doesn't deserve it.
If there's young cinema people who haven't seen quite enough films or only starting off their journey, it's a good list to kind of delve into.
Come back to us. We'll cherry pick the good ones for you.
There's another lovely run that I like. 201 down to 194, where it goes Platoon, Ben-Hur, The Lives of Others,
fine.
The Fountain,
fine.
Synecdoche, New York, An American Werewolf in London,
yeah.
8.5,
fine.
Yeah. The Sound of Music.
Okay, yeah. That's fine, bar one. I'm happy for all those there. Even The Fountain, dare I say, which I think is a misunderstood little gem.
I agree.
But, Kick-Ass. Kick-Ass is on this list.
Kick-Ass is between Field of Dreams and Sunset Boulevard.
Wow, which two items are not like the other?
Listen, we could spend hours in this.
Yeah,
but we won't, because quite frankly, I my brain needs to relax.
But at the same time, I see some entries and I just have to wonder about it. Her is on the list. This pleases me somehow.
Yeah, but it doesn't belong there.
I don't know. It'd be on the borderline for me if I had a really hard think about it.
I liked it. I need a bit of time.
I like to know more than
to
you.
See
I know
where we're at now.
I know a lot of people.
Years
I know a lot of people would probably say with me on this, but yeah, it's that one's very much a personal taste thing.
No, I totally get it.
But I'll put it this way: Watchmen is 153. What the hell?
Thank you and good night.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a film that's better than a lot of them. There, Good Night and Good Luck, not on the list.
Really?
That's a fine film.
Yeah. That is a fine film. So, I don't know if I put it in it certainly wouldn't be in my top 300 of all time, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I would have it ahead of Watchmen.
Hot Fuzz, Children of Men, Dirty Dancing, RoboCop. These are all on the list.
RoboCop should be there.
Avatar is 110.
Is Blue Frame Roger Rabbit in there?
I don't think so.
Oh, what?
Oh my God, it's the best blockbuster of the last 25 years.
Cinema Paradiso.
No, it's not.
Sentimental
nonsense.
God, we've gone very cynical.
We have gone very cynical. What happened to us, Jay?
Lists like this come out.
It's not me.
I was whistling today before I seen this list.
Persona is only 281. 28 would be more like it.
No, I'm joking.
But don't worry, Iron Man is ahead of it at 239. So.
It's not made for us, Jay.
It'd only just be Prometheus. If you want to put it that way. Maybe one vote.
Okay, you remember that faith I was talking about being restored in the public?
Yeah.
It's waning. It's
I just wish it was beaten by one place by Transformers.
Sidewing.
Which, again, the Wild Bunch beats Transformers by one place, and then is in turn beaten by the Hunger Games. Like, just a small child putting this list together.
Well, in fairness, they did put The Godfather at 2, so you do have to appreciate that.
I do, but it's like, it's obvious. Like, The Godfather goes high because it's one of those films.
Yeah, it deserves it.
I suspect half the people haven't even seen it that much.
And besides, Empire Strikes Back is number 1. Please.
Bollocks.
No, but that's just proof that it's a populist list.
Yeah. Well, it certainly is that. I'm going through the list and I'm seeing more and more things that are in places they shouldn't be, and just... No, I've wasted enough breath on this, frankly.
Yeah, I'm done.
Thanks for this suggestion, Niall. You've just made our blood boil.
Yeah, Niall, you've really I've got to go home with something good now.
Yeah, right. Just to get the taste away.
Okay, well then, on that bombshell,
we
shall leave it for the week.
Very good.
Good night and good luck.
Thank you.